All right, welcome back to the show. Today we are joined by a very special guest, Olivia Papakrikos. Yes. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting. It's really awesome to see this.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad we were able to get you on the show. And I was wondering, maybe we could start off just by you introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I am the founder of Papakrikos Therapy and Performance, Inc. And so I'm a licensed therapist and sports psychology consultant. So I specialize in working with athletes as well as individuals with eating disorders and doing mental health therapy, as well as sports performance work. And so that's what the day-to-day kind of looks like. And, I went to BU for my master's program, so this is like coming back to a familiar space. But That's what the bulk of my work looks like. I work with universities, too, and athletic departments. So really focusing in on that, like helping athletes really maximize their performance.
And are you usually working with college athletes, or does it kind of span into other age groups as well?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say the bulk of my work right now is with the college population. With that being said, though, I've worked with professional level sports, I've worked with amateur, even, you know, athletes that are like 10, 11 years old, especially in gymnastics, because they specialize in sports so young, they're in the gym 25 hours a week. So, You know, they're really training as the bulk of their week.
Nice. And do you mind elaborating a little bit more on like what performance psychology is and kind of more on how you incorporate that into what you do?
Yeah, totally. So performance psychology is really focusing on, right, how do we maximize our performance? How do we address the mental and psychological aspects of performing in any regard? So similar to how we train our body in sports, we practice, we lift, we do recovery stuff, stretching. We need to train our mind to also be able to handle stress, handle, you know, quick response times or making decisions, handle how we come back if we make a mistake, how we respond if we're injured and we can't play anymore. And so performance psychology is really looking at all the mental aspects of performing, competing in really any domain, and focusing on how do we make sure we're in the best mental space, but also how do we maximize that performance too.
Mm-hmm. All right. So do you work... So I know this applies a lot to athletes. Would you say it's also, do you work with other individuals who perform maybe like in the arts or other aspects?
Yeah, totally. So that's a big part of it. I mean, it used to be more called like sports psych, but now it's more performance psychology or sports psych because it really is coming up in every domain. So dancers, arts, performing, musicians, like all of that, we are performing, but also in the business world, it's come up a lot. And so in the business world, if you're working a job that has a lot of high demands or you have to have output or sales, things like that, there's a lot of pressure and expectations to perform and to excel in those roles. And so it's the exact same concepts and theories that can then help them also excel and perform too, and really make the most of where they're at, because mentally, like, we're all performing in some regard. We're all on and having to show up and do something. And so it's really targeting the idea that, like, everyone is performing in their own regard. It's just figuring out, like, what that looks like for each person.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I really do like that idea that it does apply to everyone and it's not just a certain type of performance, because I think performing can also mean so many different things to different people, and that's a big obstacle that I think a lot of people always don't know how to approach or face. I was kind of wondering what kind of brought you to want to study this and pursue this professionally. I know that you were a college athlete yourself, and I was wondering maybe if you could talk a little bit about your own experience as well.
So, I mean, like, backstory there, I always wanted to do something in psychology. That was what I was passionate about, but I never really knew what that looked like. I mean, psychology is one of those majors where you can go into psychology and then do absolutely nothing with it, or you could go and really stay in it. And so I wasn't sure what I wanted, but I was a college athlete. And in my school, I was lucky enough to have sports psych on staff or on, you know, someone that came in once a week. And so that kind of opened my eyes up just to that career path and what it could look like. But even then, I didn't really know what that meant or what that role would look like. And sports and performance psychology has come so far as a career. It's not something like back in that day, there was way less opportunities and positions in it, because it is so niche that it's also kind of facing a lot of that stigma of mental health in sports. And, you know, that's why it's taken time for it to keep growing. And so for me and my background, was a field hockey player, and I had compartment syndrome in my legs. And so after my freshman and sophomore seasons, I had to get surgery on both of my legs and navigate the recovery process in each spring season. And that for me was really tricky. That was really difficult to go from playing and being so active in the fall to then not being able to do what I loved and not even being able to walk normally, or, you know, being on crutches around campus in the cold weather, not being able to practice with my team. Like, it is an isolating experience, and it is really hard. And learning how to navigate that, I mean, it was a challenge for me. I had to utilize those supports. I utilized our sports psych at the time. And I think that was a huge thing of like, okay, I want to help all these other athletes who are going through this, because, you know, like, surgeries and injury in sport is like, it's everywhere, especially with mm-hmm. the level of overtraining that can happen. And I knew it was an area which I could help, and I felt like I could really relate to and be passionate about. But then also, you know, my later years in college, as I was back in and playing and competing, I also just noticed that performance anxiety piece coming up of like, I need to go in, I need to perform. My body's getting older. It hurts more to play a full field hockey game, and feeling like, you know, I remember sitting in the national anthem, and I'd be sitting there thinking like, I just got to get through this game. I just got to get through this game. And it took a lot of support, and it took working with a sports psych to be like, all right, like, even if you're not on that whole time, like, it's just going in there and doing what you can and having fun and doing the best you can, because, like, you don't have to be on and perfect and in the zone that whole time. There are options, there are supports to help you navigate that. And that's what really kind of solidified it, is like, I already knew I wanted to help athletes who were going through similar things injury-wise, but then mm-hmm. to also have that experience performance-wise, where I had such high expectations of myself to perform, and needing that support really made it clear, like, this is a path where, like, I feel really passionate about.
Yeah. So, after your injury, were you able to get back into playing, or was that kind of the end?
Fortunately, I was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know for a lot of athletes who are navigating injury and need surgery, you know, it isn't always that way, and it doesn't always work out that they can get back into it. And so, you know, I was really blessed to be able to get back into it and be able to perform and compete. It definitely didn't look the same, and I had to earn my spot and earn my time as my mm-hmm. body was recovering. But, you know, there was a lot of ups and downs, but getting back into it felt really rewarding at the time, because it was, you know, all this work had this ultimate, like, purpose. I got to this end point where I was able to kind of do the thing I loved and do it in a way that I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. Yeah. That is, I can't even imagine the pressure of, like, being a college athlete personally. Mm-hmm. I did sports in high school, and that already felt like way too much, and yeah. then coming into such a competitive field where I feel like it is kind of, you have to fight for your spot.
Yeah.
You have to be constantly proving yourself that you like deserve to be there. Must be such a draining toll that it takes on you.
Yeah. And totally. And I think what makes it even harder is at those higher levels at Division I athletics, scholarships are involved, and in the scholarship mode, you know, they're expected to perform and expected to keep going. And, you know, they don't know if that scholarship is always guaranteed at some schools. And so there's a lot of pressure, and that's, you know, they're also balancing their social life. They're balancing their mental health. They're balancing academics. It's mm-hmm. a lot of moving pieces, and it's a lot on them to really manage all those stressors and perform and to get it all done. And it's something that a lot of my clients now, especially my college athletes, it's one of the biggest things they come to me with, is like, there's so many things, everyone's expecting so much of me, and I don't know how I can make everything fit without compromising my own self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of, you just touched on this a little bit with how balance is a really big part of the issue that a lot of athletes are facing. And I was wondering, are there other really big themes you see with the mental challenges that athletes have, or other people struggling with like performance issues, in addition to that idea of balance? Is there any other big problems that you see come up a lot?
I think one big one I see a lot is, you know, some level of overtraining, underfueling happening, because athletes don't always have the resources to know, right, like what proper fueling looks like. And with the training level, especially at like the Division I levels, it's so intensive that it can really be overtraining often without even meaning to be. And so that's a big one we run into a lot, and that can lead to injury, that can lead to feeling more stressed, more anxious, potentially even more depressed, because our body's not getting the things it needs. So that's a big one that does come up a lot. I think also just navigating team dynamics, coach dynamics comes up a lot of, like not getting along with a teammate or coaches making decisions we don't agree with and not feeling like coaches are giving athletes what they need. And it's not necessarily because coaches are always doing something wrong as much as just, you know, like they don't always have to justify certain choices. And that can be really hard to sit with and like tolerate when a lot of these athletes at high levels go from being the stars of their teams to being on a team of all stars. Like everyone is a star, and now you have to fight even more to get that time. You have to prove yourself in other ways, and it's not just like you're a freshman and you're playing every minute guaranteed. And so that's a really big barrier because some of these athletes aren't used to ever being on the bench. They're not used to not being a starter, and for a lot of them at the high level, like that is really jarring for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely seems like a lot to adjust to coming into just a whole different environment of athletics. And I guess how, I mean, you don't have to like give too much away with like what your approach is to how you deal with things, but I think what is a typical kind of like, I don't know, day in the life of how you go about consulting people? Because I know that what you do is considered to be a type of kind of therapy, but how does that differ from other forms of either cognitive therapy or other ways?
Yeah. So, big picture, I mean, they're separate and they're together. And so I have clients that I work with and it's more strictly a therapy type relationship, and other clients where it's more sports performance, as well as clients where it's a mix of both. And so it does kind of get blurred lines. I mean, that's why having the degrees and having both, you know, experience and training and master's helps. But essentially, I mean, it's incorporating all those things. So typically it's incorporating DBT, CBT, mindfulness strategies, like a lot of different evidence-based therapies in that work, and picking and pulling based on what's going to be effective for each client, as well as those sports performance type interventions and finding that balance. But my main approach and my biggest thing is like the whole person, having that relationship. And so with every client, even if they're coming to me saying like, I just need to figure out how I can not be stressed and go into this game and play well, it's like, it's usually not that simple. It's usually involving all these other things and like getting to know them as a whole person, right? Like what is going on in your home life, your school life, your friends, because all of these things could be impacting your performance. And if something's going on in your home life, it's probably going to impact every part of your life in some way. It's not just, oh, I can't perform. And so the biggest approach and my main thing that I take with every client is just, how do we build that relationship where you feel comfortable and trusting to come talk to me about what is going on and can be really open and honest, as well as kind of getting to know like all these different areas of your life, because life is complex. Like no one's life is just like perfect and easy and nothing is ever challenging. And so if we're really looking at how to help athletes perform better, we have to be looking at them as a whole person. We have to be looking at their mental health, looking at all these different domains, because that's how they're going to actually be able to focus on performing and actually achieve the things that they're capable of when they're not sitting there stressing about all these other areas of their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you usually work one-on-one or do you ever do kind of group sessions as well?
So I've kind of done the whole gamut. Yeah. Most of my work now is one-on-one. With that being said, though, I've done a lot of like team talks, team workshops. I have like different teams that I work pretty routinely with each year. And so I'll do talks with their teams and talks with coaches around that kind of stuff. But big picture, it's a lot of one-on-one work or small group work, even family work in the day-to-day, and then kind of navigating different speaking or workshop opportunities as they come, just because, you know, it does take investing in that space and in a group of people or a team. Like not everyone's going to buy into that. Like I think the mental side of sports is still very undervalued in a lot of settings, and I think there's people who are going to be like, yeah, that makes sense, it's totally valid, I see that, and there's people who are like, nope, I don't need that, that doesn't matter. And so I think in a group setting it's a little different because different levels of buy-in, different levels of people who are engaging with that material, but it really can look like team stuff, group stuff, you know, all different mm-hmm. types.
You've done it all.
Yeah, for sure.
And I was kind of also wondering, I mean, since this is something that you also can really personally relate to, do you ever find it, which is just a question I have for anyone really working in a mental health field, just do you ever find it very draining or hard to kind of have these talks, have these sessions, that ever like really discouraging, or do you feel mm-hmm. that you can kind of separate out yourself from it, or kind of how you deal with that?
It's tough. Like I won't sugarcoat it. I think there are days that are harder than others. There are days that are longer than others. I think the thing about working in like mental health and you know, client focused care is like, you don't know what they're coming in with. Like, they could come in and life could be relaxed and there's small bumps and we're navigating that. They could come in and their whole world could have crashed down that day or that week. And so I think what's really hard is like, it can get really heavy and it can get really draining. And it's trying to, you know, balance your schedule in a way that works for you, find that balance, but also find that self-care piece, because it is a lot. You know, like with my clients, I'm showing up for them. It's not a normal conversation with a coworker or a friend where it's like two-sided and I can talk about what's going on for me and right. You can talk about what's going on for you. It's, I am showing up for them and I'm kind of holding some of that stuff that they're going through, and that can get really heavy and exhausting. And I think that's where one, like, self-compassion and creating space for yourself is so huge, but also finding the balance to know, like, you can't do it all. And there are times you have to take that break and take a step back, because if, like, I'm not taking care of myself, I'm not providing good care. I'm not doing much to support them, because at the end of the day, like, I'm not in my best mental space to be doing that.
Right. Sorry. Right. Yeah. Oh, the self-care is definitely a big aspect of that.
Totally.
Do you have a certain method or way that you like to make sure that you're taking care of yourself too?
Kind of depends on the season. I really like golfing, and so that's something I do for me and kind of helps like debrief and just decompress. Other than that, like winter, I bake a lot more because I nice. Find that just being really enjoyable. I have a dog. I lift a lot. So mm-hmm. I think finding like that balance between like physical movement and also just like self-care, things that are soothing and comforting is mm-hmm. is really important for me. And I also think just like being able to adapt. And so if there's a day where I'm like, I just like don't have it in me to go do this social plan or go have this, you know, thing after work, it's like allowing that to be okay, because forcing myself to do it, I think, is the bigger thing. So like giving myself the space to also say no is like mm-hmm. almost become its own practice in itself.
Yeah. So. No, that's such a huge thing. I feel like it's always so hard to be okay with saying no to things and not like viewing it as not taking a certain opportunity, but it's so important to kind of do that for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you graduated from BU with a master's degree and still based in Boston. I was kind of wondering if you had maybe any advice for current BU students about how to, either in terms of mental health or in terms of kind of finding what you wanted to do professional-wise, anything that you want to share or that comes to mind?
I think the one thing to keep in mind is, like, there's no pressure to have it all figured out immediately. Like, we don't necessarily know what we're going to do. If you had asked me when I was in college or grad school that I was going to have my own practice, I would have said no. Like, that doesn't sound like anything I'd want to do. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have to have everything figured out or sorted out. I would really advise just like finding what you enjoy doing and seeing if there's anything that comes to mind you can kind of think of that does kind of embody that, and knowing that there is no black and white. And sometimes you might go down a path that's somewhat connected to what you're interested in, and you can still then detour back into what you're interested in. And like, even if it's not always immediately the perfect fit, that doesn't mean it actually can't become the better fit once you get that time and experience. Mm-hmm. Because like, especially with sports, like early in your career, when you're first getting out there, like, you're not getting a lot of sports psych clients. You're not getting a lot of, like, you have to really work your way into that field and build that experience and reputation. And a lot of times that means working more in, like, the counseling therapy role, because you're just getting that practice and experience and building your name. And I think knowing that sometimes, like, the path to figuring out what you do doesn't have to be this direct thing, and you can kind of have flexibility, and all the experiences you do are going to help you get to that ultimate path. And recognizing that, like, no one has it all figured out. I don't know what next year or next 5 years are going to look like, and that's okay. It's just like sitting with that is uncomfortable sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. We're coming up to the end of our time, but I was wondering if you had anything you want to plug, how to get in touch with you, if you have any speaking engagements coming up that you want to share.
Yeah. So for anyone, even if it's just to ask questions or learn more about, you know, the work I do, you can go to my website. It's oliviapapakarikos.com. That is a mouthful. Or also on Instagram, you can find me in my account, Papakarikos Therapy and Performance. I'm out of Boston. You can find me on Psychology Today, but I'm always happy to just connect, even if it's not because we want to work together, but just for you to learn more. Happy to really help anyone who's looking to get in the field as well.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Yeah. It was really lovely to have you.
Thank you.
And we will be getting back into some music.